Oh my gosh. You are going to love this episode. I love this episode. Can't quite get enough of it. I love my guest that is on this episode. Her name is January Donovan, and she shares so much wisdom about womanhood, motherhood, and you're going to love this. I'm telling you, you're going to love it. She talks about developing the skills to own our value, to own our worth, and to feel it. And I never knew that. I didn't know that there were skills involved. And that's really cool. And I'm really excited to share this interview with you. Hi, I'm Wendy Bergen. I'm just a regular mom with a husband, a bunch of kids, and some dogs. And I'm the founder of Joyfully Prepared, a business dedicated to teaching busy moms skills like gardening, food preservation, natural remedies, and more, so they can take care of themselves through developing talents, supporting their families with confidence, and saving money. I've rolled down the mountain of accomplishment so many times that I have skin knees, grass in my teeth, and sticks in my hair. All of these mistakes have actually allowed me to become more confident in my knowledge and skills. I'm eager to learn and strive to create a space where people want to learn. Oh, I'm not perfect. In fact, someone once described me as the queen of preparedness, but normal, without scaring people. Whether it's canning, gardening, emergency preparedness, or anything else, I teach others to feel confident in learning it. Hi, this is the Joyfully Prepared podcast, and I'm your host, Wendy Bergen. And I have the honor to talk with and have a guest, January Donovan. I am so excited to talk with her and to learn from her. January, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, I'm so grateful and honored. Thank you so much, Wendy. I love it. Joyful. That's what we're all called to.
That's right. Joy. Exactly. So thank you
for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. Honestly, I'm so excited just to have this conversation with you. Will you just introduce yourself, tell people your story and how you got to where you are?
Great. So my name is January Donovan. I'm the founder of The Woman School. I've been training women for close to 25 years, really focus on a mindset, which is training how we think about who we are. Also skill set, which is, I know, big in Wendy's heart, which is really based on our level of competency and how we show up in the world. I love what I do. I sort of brought into this work because nobody ever showed me how, and I suffered for it. And it wasn't really till I kind of was on the bottom of the barrel and kind of got to know our Lord, who he was, and my own journey of understanding my value as a woman. And that led me to realize that I was not alone. And so I spent so much of my college years, post-college years, training women on understanding their value, equipping them with the mindset and skill set that they need to actually design the life that they want and deserve, that is divinely given, the good that they deserve. So we're now in more than 40 countries. I did it for free for 15 years because I loved it. I realized that women needed greater accountability. And so we built a school for women. And so they're taking God out of our school system, our government. They're taking now the woman out of our institutions. And so the vision here is that we're going to bring the woman right into the heart of the home and teach her how and give her the skills. So I'm passionate about what I do. I'm a mom of eight. I've been married 17 years to my best friend. And so, yeah, I feel like it's a truly a privilege to be with women every day. So I'm grateful.
Thank you so much. I read, you know, I've watched a few of your podcasts and read about you, and you had a mentor, right? You found a mentor. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe she found you in college. Is that yes. Right?
Elena, I actually dedicated part of my book to her, which is Redefine Success for Women, because I think success is so one-dimensional. It's causing so much women a lot of pain. But anyways, her name was Elena. And when I was in college, I was depressed. I was anxious. I was everything that I never wanted to be and never knew how to be. And so my first month in college, she was meeting with all the girls. So it was just a mentor in college. And I met with her my first month. And she said, January, what kind of woman do you want to be? And I just thought, well, I don't have a choice, Elena. She said, yes, you do. Let's design you. And so for 3.5 years, I met with her almost every single month. I had homework that I had to submit. And it was a piece of paper that I literally had to write out almost every arena of my life. So that's where wholeness comes from, is that every part of me was accounted for. My first homework was to get rid of comparison and competition so I could have genuine friendship, to make my bed so that I could feel accomplished and have a life of order before I went to the bathroom, that was specific, and then get up at 4:30 in the morning so I could prepare, plan, pray, and get myself ready for the morning. And that changed so much of my life. And that was just the beginning.
So you said that to get rid of comparison, and did you say competition? Competition.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is that the same thing as feeling safe for women? I think a lot of people don't feel safe. They don't know that they don't feel safe, but.
Yeah, I think there's part of the issue that I see, Wendy, is that we don't have language for our ache and our desires. And it's sort of like, safe or what I want. I think that we have become so relativistic in our culture that we don't have a shared conversation on the value of women. And I think it boils down to, we don't feel safe. We compare and compete with other women because we actually don't know our value. So what do I mean by that? Our value is divinely given. And if you want physical evidence of that, not necessarily physical, just look at your neurological wirings, your trillions of cells, the circumstances in which you were born, your unique abilities, gifts, your wounds, your joy, all of that unique combination makes you what? Rare. What do we consider rare in our world? We put high value in it. But if you think about a woman, a human being, and the combination of their rarity, it gives us evidence of their unique, irreplaceable value, because that unique combination it's unrepeatable. Nobody was ever you in the past, and nobody ever can be you. And so by sheer evidence, physically, we can say that you are a valuable, irreplaceable, unrepeatable human being. Here's the problem. That's our value, right? And we can say every human being is valuable. The problem is that we don't know our value, because our value is revealed to us. So when a baby is born, you look at that baby and you're like, you can poop, you can pee, you can, you know, keep me up. But I don't put conditions on your value. I don't say, well, if you don't poo or pee or make a noise, I'll love you more. No, we love them unconditionally, right? But as a baby grows, and now they're 7 years old and they get a C, we maybe shame them. Or they go to the school system and we shame them because they don't have an A, even though they might have worked harder. And so as a baby grows, we put condition in their value. You're valuable if and when. You're important if and when you get an A, if you're thin, if you make money. And we call this in the woman's school the poisonous bee. It poisons our self-worth. Hmm. Now, self-worth means it's our understanding of our value. Just because I'm valuable and priceless, but if I don't believe it, because somebody told me that I'm only valuable only if and when I'm this thin or this much money, I will spend my life having to what? Prove my value. Because there's an innate desire for a woman to want to feel valuable. It's written in our heart. It's written in our heart. And we want to know we're a valuable human being. And so every single time we are conditioned culturally to say that you're valuable only if and when you can make money, we feel an ache, but we don't know it. It's like a cancer and it's all over. But now, if you look at the world, there's five things that makes a woman valuable. Your power, positions of power, right? So all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm just one tiny person. I don't have any powerful position. I'm not as valuable as a CEO. Your possessions, I only make $1,000 or $10K, not $1 million. So that $1 million woman, you feel like is more important than you. Mm-hmm. Your perfection. I don't look perfect. I don't have the perfect life. Clearly that Instagram model is more important than me. Now, we're not saying that, but we're feeling it, right? What we can produce. Oh my gosh, I failed. Oh, look at that perfect, successful woman. She's more important than I am, right? And so what we do is our popularity. Just more followers and less followers. So she must be more important. And so we place these metric of women's value. And culturally, we just assume it's what makes women feel valuable. So all of a sudden a mother feels like, I'm not as important because I don't have the fame. I don't have the, but is that really true? What doesn't change is the fact that they still have the trillions of cells, the irreplaceable combination of their unique ability. They're still valuable, but they don't know it because they've been told that their self-worth is based on their performance production. And so now most women are asking the question, am I enough? It's the battle cry.
The battle cry. That's interesting. Am I enough?
Am I good enough for my man? Am I good enough to do this business? Am I good enough to, one, be your friend? Am I good enough to be in this position of leadership? Am I good enough? Am I even good enough for God? I mean, literally. So I was training this one woman and she was so funny. She was doing a journal to God and she's like, I've got to edit it. And I'm like, well, God doesn't really need for you to edit it. You know, she's like, well, I just feel bad. You know, and obviously it's a nice thing, but it was almost as though that conditioning came from the fact that she needed to prove something. Mm-hmm. Like, Lord, you love me more and you'll give me what I want if and when I do this.
Right.
And so we place conditions and it becomes, that's why our understanding of our self-worth is the foundation of our life. It's the foundation even of how we see God. It's the foundation of our relationship, of our marriage, of how we show up as mothers. It's the foundation of our society. Our society right now has this false understanding of a value. So many women are hurting because they don't know that they're so valuable and so precious. They lay in bed at night knowing, I need to prove myself to my boss tomorrow. I need to prove myself to my husband.
Mm-hmm. It's hard, isn't it?
I think it's hard, but it's also hopeful when we have the language. Because here's the most exciting part is that, you know, just a stroke victim, you know, once they get a stroke, they have to learn to walk again, learn to talk again.
Mm-hmm.
I train women to rewire how to actually think of their worth as unconditional. So once you can give the woman language and you can train them to rewire that their worth is unconditional, it changes everything in their life. It changes their marriage, it changes their friendship, it changes how they show up in their home. It changes how they allow their children to respect them or disrespect them. It changes the way they build business. And all it does is that we need to, you know, first, number one is that we need to be aware that it's happening. Number two, then we need to neurologically wire it. We need to literally say over and over again. And then number three, we need to build skill set because we need to be competent in order to actually preserve our self-worth. So there's a lot that goes in it. But I think that if you give a woman a blueprint, I've seen 1,000 times over, Wendy. I've seen it. And women are doing it. They're changing their value, understanding of their value, and it's changing the quality of every part of their life. It's so hopeful. I think neuroscience has given us so much hope.
Yeah, I agree. I wish I knew you earlier to help me, but that's okay because God works with me. You know, he's got my back. But I've had the last few months have been a little difficult for me because of a family situation. And over Christmas time, I was praying and writing my journal and kind of talking it out loud. And I'm like, this thought keeps coming into my brain about whatever. And finally, God's voice got through, like the thought. And he said, how about instead of you think about that thought, how about when that thought comes up, you start to think about something else? Like that's your trigger thought to go think of something else. And that's what I've done. And it's slow. It takes a while to retrain your brain to think a different way.
Mm-hmm. Well, part of it is that where do you learn the skill of having a thought inventory? Which is one of the skills that we teach in the school. You become what you think about. That's scriptural.
Yes.
And so, you know, as a woman, I teach my, you know, I have 8 children, 4 daughters. I have to train my 7-year-old, my 8-year-old to think about what they're thinking as a skill set, habitual. But then not only have to think about what they're thinking, they need to replace it automatically. As opposed to, you know, women right now, because nobody's training us, we sit there for months and we're like, oh, you know. Then they suffer for months and months and months until somebody guides them and says, you know, maybe you can place this up. And so what we need to do is to give ourselves skill after skill and training after training, because then, you know, we suffer unnecessarily and it robs us of perhaps what God is even asking of us, because we're ruminating negative thoughts that are actually convoluting our brain to think about what God is thinking about who we are. So that's why I think scripting is so key. Scripting wires our brain, you know? And so when that negative thought comes in, my thought inventory automatically, I'm like, you know, I'm whatever the situation and is, my mother berate, my mother-in-law, you know, thinks I'm not good enough.
Right. Replace,
you know, my mother-in-law's opinion of me is not my opinion of me.
Mm.
And so you have these script, which is really kind of a proactive response to how you want to deal with external circumstances. So you just have hundreds of those in your back pocket.
Wow.
And that's the thing is that once again, I go back to there's just no language. One of the first things that you're going to really notice and everyone does in the women's school is there's a whole new language.
Mm.
You know, we have thousands and thousands of scripts. Because how do you change your life when you don't change the words that you use? You know, like I tell women, I know this is a phone because the words that come out as a phone shapes, it takes a mental image. But if I go blah, 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 what comes into your mind? Nothing.
Nothing.
Right? Because there's no framework. Language is the container in which we actually put things together. So if I say, life is so hard, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's going to be hard.
Exactly, because you become what you think about. And God is so beautiful and amazing. He put this part of our brain called a reticular activating system, RAS. I teach my children, which is that part at the bottom of our cerebellum that helps us actually expand what we focus on. So if I am pregnant, all of a sudden I start to see all the pregnant, you know, we're looking for like a white, whatever, van. All of a sudden I start to see all the white vans, right? To give myself options. It's the same thing. If I'm saying life is so hard, I'm never going to get out of this business, this man is so disrespectful, what's going to happen to me is I'm going to give myself more evidence of what I'm looking for. This is why it's so important for women to actually focus on what they want and not what they don't want. But what have we been trained to do, Wendy? Don't focus on what you want because you don't want to be disappointed.
Right. Yes.
Because it's 100%. Unrealistic. Because it could not be what God wants for you. Is as opposed to maturing what we want, making, aligning it in harmony with what God wants, we ignore it. Or we have the opposite extreme, we indulge in it. Whatever we want, whatever we feel like, we go for it. So we have two radical extremes of indulging in what you want or ignoring what you want. Both create a disorder and resentment and anger, as opposed to ordering what you want to align with your highest good.
Well, God is a God of order.
Correct.
Why wouldn't we want to do the same that he does? We want to be like him, correct?
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's what we but I think that in itself is a skill set, you know, like
the language
that, you know, when I'm training women, you know, I say, you're either indulging or ignoring your desires. And they're like, I've never even thought about it, January. I've never even thought about my desires. You know, I did this one, I was just in a speaking engagement, 300 women in Michigan. It was beautiful. And one of the exercises that I did with them was, I'm going to give you 3 minutes, 5 minutes to kind of think about what you want and don't want in every arena of your life. That's what we do in the women's school. It's part of the integration of the whole woman is that, you know, every part of it, your mental health, your physical health, your self-image, your friendship, your intimacy, your contribution, your environment, what do you want and don't want? And I cannot tell you, Wendy, how challenging that exercise is for so many women. And afterwards, you know, I've done this 1,000 times over and it's fun to do it live because you can see some women just like fall. And some women are angry. And some women are like hungry. I'm like, I've never thought about it, you know? And this one woman in January, I actually have never used that muscle. I can't even think about what I want. It's like when you go to the gym, I've never used, you know, used to using the muscle of the gym. You're like, oh my gosh, this is hard. That's really what's happening in our culture is that, you know, we're told what to want. You need to want a size, whatever.
Right.
You need to want money and you need to want fame and fortune as opposed to thinking, what do I want? Does the desire of my heart reveal God's call in my life? And I will say yes, in its ordered state. You know, like why did Simone Biles, she's an Olympic gymnast, decide to go to become a gymnast? Because somehow there was this mustard seed of desire planted in their heart. Why am I doing the woman's school? Why do I want to be a mom? There's a desire and not all desires are good.
Right.
But you follow that desire and you say, is this my highest good? Is this in alignment with God's design for me? You discern it. But to ignore it and indulge in it really wreaks havoc in our life, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what I tell women, is that permission to discover the desires of your heart and wrestle with it so that you can mature it to order it towards your highest good and your call.
As I'm listening to you, I feel like I'm older, like I'm 50, almost 56 years old. Mm-hmm. And we were talking before the podcast, like, I remember when there was home ec in school, as you do.
Yeah, I had home ec. I'm 45, so we're not right. that far.
Well,
off.
Not too much. But the culture is different from when I grew up to now. In a lot of ways, I have an amazing mother. I love my mom. She is just everything. And I learned much of what I am today because of her. I'm careful because my mom, to me, my mom's perfect. What I've seen, though, that kind of got passed down from culture to culture to culture, which I see is still there, but with women like you and like me, where we're trying to help other women recognize their divinity and their, you know, joy and confidence, it's a different mindset. Like we're really switching. I was at a podcast convention last week, and I met these two 20-something year old girls. They were delightful. They were so delightful. They knew what their worth is, and they were pursuing. And I thought, oh my gosh, I wish I could have been them when I was 25. I mean, you can't say that because you have your own journey, but I was so proud of them. And I was so happy and honored to be in their presence. And they were so nice to me. It was just lovely. And so there, I do think there is some kind of a shift for women. But there are a lot of women, I feel like myself, I'll put myself out there in a vulnerable position where I, like the women you talk to, I don't have an imagination. I haven't learned how to grow an imagination because, again, all I knew that I was supposed to be a mom, a wife and a mom. And that's fantastic. But I want to do other things as well. I want to travel and I want to, you know, laugh. A lot. I really like laughter.
That's
my number one thing on my list is laughing.
Oh,
and,
I love it.
And have a, you know, just have freedom. And there's a heavy energy though in the world that doesn't seem to want to let us be this joyful excitement, you know, have excitement or hope even. But I think that's just, two energies playing against each other. I believe all things are possible. That's one of the gifts God gave me. Anything's possible with him. And what I see you doing is that you've figured out the scripts, you've figured out the language, and you've worked with enough women and yourself that you've probably seen just about all of it at this point.
Yeah. So it's a great conversation. First of all, I want to honor your openness to those women because it tells me it reveals your heart, your kindness, your generosity, and your genuineness, which is,
thank you.
To be honest with you, it's no longer a common thing, and which is a sad thing. So number one, let's look at the history of the last 100 years. Prior to that 100 years, women really didn't have a voice, didn't have a choice, did not really have a place outside of their home.
Correct.
So imagine all of the women who probably had a call outside of their home, what they had to endure to silence, not just what they want, but perhaps what God wants for them. Right. And so now we've had the feminist movement who fought for their voice, their choice, which was good, but it came with a lot of bad. Okay. So what we have is that now women can vote, now women can choose, but did they know how to choose?
Right.
Freedom in context of responsibility. And so your 1920s, we could vote. We have to celebrate that. But we also have to look at it with a lens of scrutiny to see, well, what were the good? What were the bad? What can we learn from it? Right. And then in the 1960s, there was a sexual revolution. And now women were no longer, I would say, in their homes. There was sort of this a shift that kind of spoke to, I am woman, I don't need a man revolution.
Right.
And so it came from, I want to have a voice to, I don't need a man. And then to now, you know, they call the third wave of feminism, probably around the 90s, do I hate men?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't need a man, do I hate men? You right. know, and so we're looking at what just sort of happened where now, you know, they call it sort of the Me Too movement, which was, mm-hmm. we needed to make sure that there was accountability in women and there wasn't, you know, these things were not happening. The women were not sexualized. That was a good thing. But also, what were these things that perhaps wounded women? So if we're looking at the history of women and then compounding that, internet came, social media came.
Mm-hmm.
Our infrastructure based on the radical transformation that happened 100 years. We used to live next to our parents. We mm-hmm. used to have our grandmothers. There used to be generational skill being passed on.
Yes.
Now, what happens when there was sort of a shift in the cultural kind of norms, all of a sudden the mothers were not there. But then mm-hmm. not only that, our parents could not have teach us how to actually work in this world
mm-hmm.
of social media. How
right.
could your mom teach you how to stay focused in a world of internet? Like I tell moms all the time, because they feel bad about their children maybe not growing in faith or not perhaps living the life of virtue. And I tell them, the world shifted so much that we couldn't keep up. The parents didn't know how to teach their
right.
children. And here's right. a good example. A good cook, a mom is a great cook. The daughter doesn't necessarily become a good cook. Why? Because while her mom's cooking, she's on the phone. She's not paying attention. There's mm-hmm. so much more distraction. We're not actually communicating effectively because now we're our communication skill is like, let me know or LTD. I mean, it's so different.
Yes.
And so we have to take look at how the world changed,
mm-hmm.
a lack of skill training in mm-hmm. context of how the world changed and the continuous devaluing of women, which is what I talked about. Those three things are culprit. And so what you have now are women that are overwhelmed, mm-hmm. stressed because they're underskilled. So that makes the world really heavy.
Mm.
Because imagine feeling as though you're overwhelmed and depressed and you feel like there's no end in sight. That's going to create a cultural darkness when you have no hope. Like it's never going to get better. Motherhood is just hard. Marriage yeah. is just hard. Well, I don't think God ordained it to be hard for the rest of our life. There are hard moments.
Mm-hmm.
But motherhood should be full of joy. So is marriage, is friendship. It shouldn't be toxic. But because we lack the skill training in context of how the world changed, and then you've got the devaluing of women that is being pounded as at, you know, in media and social media and even in our universities and now in our school system. I mean, yes, there's heaviness and darkness because there is a war against our worth as women. And not only that, there's a fourth additional problem. Now we are being undefined. So now the fourth wave of feminism is I can be a man. Like you came from, I want equal rights to, I don't need a man to, I am angry at men to now I can be a man. We've gone, logic is out the door. You know, so much of our country in America is based on biblical principles.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe that the freedom that we have in America is God-given freedom. It's the freedom that our Lord intends it, right? The freedom to have liberty and happiness. I mean, that is a God-given right. But where are we now? We don't know what a woman is. We don't know what a man is. There's a breakdown of family. I mean, we are living literally a direct attack and assault on our God-given worth. And so why is there a heaviness? I think it's because right now we are experiencing, I would say, a spiritual warfare against women's value, the masterpiece of creation. But when evil abounds, grace abounds more. When there's darkness, light will become mm-hmm. a radiance. And so I tell women, we have got to armor up for this battle. There is a war against our worth. And the only way we're going to solve this is that if we armor up. And what does it mean to armor up? We have to train. Like, soldiers go to war and they have to go on boot camp and they have to train, right? But where do you get access to training on how to be a woman? This is why I'm so passionate about it, Wendy, because we're suffering and women are robbed. You know, God is getting robbed, I think, of what he's intended for our calls. Maybe I was called to actually, you know, create the school for women 20 years ago, but because I didn't have some of the basic skill set, it took me a long time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everything's providence and God makes it good in you out of all things. But I just think that I don't think we can change what's going on, you know, right now in Hollywood. I think the best way we can change it is that we create a grassroots effort of women that are fulfilled, that are competent based on confidence. Because what you said earlier, nobody can take away your skill level, your skill to manage your mind so that you're not overwhelmed, your skill to re-script yourself, your skill to manage your tone, your skill to build a routine, make a bread, clean a kitchen fast, your skill to hold people accountable, your skill to make decisions. We make 35,000 decisions a day and nobody teaches us decision-making skill. That is highway robbery. And then we have to make a decision about who to marry, who not to marry, what school to go to, what not school to go to, what, you know, what career we want to, you know, when we want to get married. I mean, can you imagine what women are enduring because they simply lack competence, skill set? We all ache for confidence because I think confidence, ultimately what we want is freedom. Because you're a confident woman. What does she have? Freedom, the freedom to choose. And so that's really why we want confidence. We want the freedom to choose. But when women are not competent in the woman's school, confidence comes from competence. Competence means that I am confident baker because I, you know, not me, but you're a confident baker or whatever, homemaker, whatever it is. I'm confident in writing a book. If you've competent in your skill level, right? You can become a confident speaker because you're competent. You can be confident in so many different parts of your life if you know how to build competency, which is skill after skill, hundreds of skill set.
Right.
That's why I'm hopeful, because I tell women, it's hard to teach virtue, but if you break virtue down into skill set, it's more palpable, you know, because if you think about temperance or, you know, just the virtues, right, of prudence, you need to teach decision-making skill to even learn the virtue of prudence.
Right.
And so we can teach women skill after skill after skill, and we can say there's the hope. If we all armor up, aka train ourselves with layers and layers of discipline, I think we can undo what has been done and what has been sort of this darkness upon us, and we become that radiant light, all of us. And that's why I'm so passionate about it, because we need a grassroots effort to rebuild our culture one whole woman at a time, because that's the only way. If you're happy, you radiate it around you, then your husband is happy and your children, and then it becomes this light all around the world. It's an unfulfilled woman who's angry, who's bitter. Guess what? She's susceptible to manipulation. She's susceptible to depression. She's susceptible to also corruption. When you're unhappy with parts of your life, you're susceptible to evil. A strong woman who knows her value, who loves the life she's living, who knows how to suffer and discipline, is not susceptible. A trained woman is not susceptible to being manipulated, to being degraded, to feel like she's not enough. I mean, all of this goes back to owning our divine worth, our God-given worth.
Yes.
But we have to train for it so that we do not become susceptible to the evil around us.
I 100% agree. And what I'm hearing as you're speaking, we, you know, we read in what, Psalms or Proverbs, about the virtuous woman, right, is greater than rubies. Is that, I don't quote very well.
Proverbs 31, it's the ideal wife.
Yes. Exactly, right. We read these, we talk about divine nature or divine calling, whatever you want to call it. And we say you have divine worth, and we, or you have worth, whatever. But what I hear you saying, and what I'm loving, is that you have pulled apart that big giant umbrella term, divine worth. And underneath that beautiful truth, you have figured out what skills are that help the woman feel it, because it's always there. When I teach Sunday school to the youth, I will stand under a light fixture, right? And the light is underneath me. And I say, it's always shining. The light is always coming down. It's us who steps into the darkness. It's never the light that goes away. And what I'm hearing you say is that as that light, and I'm getting kind of emotional, but as that light shines down, you've figured out, and you're teaching women how they can, some women are just good at certain skills. You know, gratitude, that's one of my gifts. I have the gift of gratitude and I work on it, but I have the gift of gratitude, but I don't have the gift of something else. Every gift can be developed. Every one of God's gifts can be developed. That I believe with my whole heart. And I love that you have figured this out. I love this so much. It just brings me so much joy to know that you have, I hadn't considered that, because I'm really big into defining things down to understand. And I came to you, or you came to me today, and I told you before we got on, I want to talk about worth. Mm-hmm. I want to understand it because it's a big giant term and we're supposed to feel it. But you're saying to me, I haven't developed all the skills that will help me understand it, feel confident in it. And then I can go, and I'm shining now. It's not like mm-hmm. I'm a horrible human being or anything like that. I'm doing a great job with what I know and what I can do. And most women are doing a great job with what they know and what they can do. But like all of us, we're works in progress, and knowing these little, just like baking bread, learning discipline, learning gratitude, learning all these other skills that you listed, it goes hand in hand with learning how to make bread or learning how to grow a garden. They're skills. I love skills because you can never take them away.
Right. Yeah. And it's just a recipe, you know, like
food.
What happens is that right now we don't have a recipe to make things replicable. Skill training mm-hmm. in the mm-hmm. woman's school is that I teach in frameworks and formulas so that it becomes a recipe. So you know, I need to learn my unconditional worth. These are a three-step process. Mm-hmm. And here's, you know, I started teaching women to develop an intimate prayer life. I did that for 15 years and I did it through training them the skill level. And here's what I learned, Wendy, is that the world has robbed us of what I call formation. So we live in an information world. We are bombarded. Mm-hmm. Information. And so what I'm seeing is that women know so much, mm-hmm. but knowing does not equal being. Just because I know the scripture, that doesn't mean I'm charitable.
Right.
Just because I know that what scripture tells you and I can recite it cover to cover what my worth is, that doesn't mean I incarnate. And so much of women want to incarnate what they know, the good mm-hmm. that they know, but the question always is how?
Mm-hmm.
How? So what I believe is missing, or how we can continue in our world, is that in order to take our knowing into being, it becomes part of who we are, the being, then we need information plus formation. Now, formation is a formula that I teach in our women's school, which is really both your mindset and your skill set. You can't just, you know, you can't just do affirmation all day long. You can't just be like, I'm grateful, but you don't actually take actions.
Right.
Right. To increase your skill of boundary, which helps your gratitude, because you'll be ungrateful if people take advantage of you eventually. So
right.
What am I saying to you is that, you know, so many women cannot receive God's love for them. So many women cannot and will not believe that they have a divine God-given worth. So many women have struggled to even receive a compliment, right? Mm-hmm. Because what they know, they don't incarnate. He can tell you, you are God's divine gift, that you are more precious than pearl, and it's all in here.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because that's how their brain was conditioned. I actually mm-hmm. am doing training on this next week. Conditioned to believe that their worth is based on all these different false metrics. So we have trained women for decades now.
Oh, yes.
Decades. And so your average good woman out there wants to do so much good for God, but they don't have, I would say, the bridge of the how.
Mm.
And not only that, what I'm seeing right now is that you don't know how to discover your unconditional worth, or you don't know how to train yourself in mindset and skill set. What I'm seeing is now the mom is overwhelmed and stressed because she just lacks the tools and skills, and she doesn't know she's valuable. Now her daughter is inheriting all that.
Mm-hmm.
She's listening. She's training, because it doesn't matter what I tell my daughter. It matters how she experiences how I live my life.
Right.
And so now it's become generational, Wendy.
Yes, 100%.
Overwhelmed mom cannot teach the joy because she's overwhelmed. She's incapable. Your brain is literally If you look at somebody who's in stress, their brain looks a lot like they're being chased by a lion. Literally. It's similar to, and it just looks like stress because your body goes in overdrive. Sure. You literally hijack and you're just trying to survive.
Right.
And so if you're trying to survive, how do you even have time to think, ponder why you're here? What's your purpose? What does God want of you? You're just trying to survive.
Right.
Because you don't have the tools.
Yeah.
Maybe it's your mother-in-law that feels like it's causing you stress. Maybe it's a dirty kitchen. Maybe it's a husband who's steeped in pornography. Maybe it's that you feel as though you're not, you know, good enough. Maybe it's stress and emotional. Maybe your home life is chaotic. I don't know, whatever that is that's causing that stress, right? What happens is that it takes over our life and it impacts every part of life. If I'm stressed, you know, if I'm, you know, stressed, right? And if I know it impacts my marriage, it impacts how I show up in my business. But most women, even, you know, sometimes we have so many women that go to sort of even therapy. It's great because I think therapy does so much to unplug us, but we still need the skills.
Right. Yes.
We still need the how. And that's why I'm passionate about this, because we need to create a school that gives women replicable recipes to assume their rightful throne as a divine gift from God. I mean, divine gift. Our worth is a divine gift from God so that we can live our life with him and for him. Because we might want to, but we don't know how to.
Right. Right. And I've learned over the last few years that when people are in stress or in pain, well, just pain, whatever that looks like, we, and I'm just as guilty as everybody, we make more decisions to get out of pain than we do to find our joy and our freedom.
So great. And,
right?
Because our brain is made for it. Actually, our brain is made for comfort. It's a reptilian brain. Just trying to survive.
It is. And so when a child doesn't do the dishes, rather than think through the problem and either work with the child or not yell at the child, we tend to yell at the child. We shame the child. We punish the child. When maybe the child just wants to spend time with us and we don't want to because we're overwhelmed with everything else. I've done that. Trust me. That's why I can say that example. But working like, so you have the skill set. What you're saying is if you have the skill set, it'll be easier for you to choose the joy and the freedom and the confidence versus just let me get out of pain. Let me just not do that.
Yeah. Let me just break. That's a great example. Okay, because and you talked about something very concrete. So a child who is you're upset because, you know, she doesn't want to do the dishes, but maybe the child doesn't know how to do the dishes. And so now the mom is shaming them. So, so instead the child wants to spend the time with the mom. And so I always say, well, why can't it be both and? Why can't I teach my child and say, listen, honey, this is five dishes. Step one is you do it and you do it really fast. Let me show you how to do it. Step two, you dry it really fast. And then you have a timer. Like I have a timer in my kitchen because I teach my children to do things efficiently. And so, and then guess what? Now we'll have more time if we do this fast and efficiently and I'll model it for you. Now we'll have more time to snuggle, buggle, whatever. But we do the dishes. We can't just also snuggle, buggle. And, you know, obviously if your child is in need, you have to kind of pay attention to that.
Of course.
But for the most part, the child probably resists so much. Like, because they just don't know how. Like, for example, if, and I see this with moms, they have so much stuff and clutter. They have all these toys in bins and you're like, got to clean up. And they're like, why aren't you cleaning up? The child literally doesn't have the skill to clean up. It is too much. It's overwhelming for them. And they don't know how to put things back where they belong. So now a child feels shame for something they were never shown how to do. And guess what? Compound overtime. Overtime. Now, all of a sudden, the child thinks I'm just not good enough for mom. Or the child cleans up and we clean up after them because it's not good enough. I was just telling my daughter. My daughter, I was teaching my son to clean up. And obviously, he was three or four. It was my four-year-old son. And then my daughter was cleaning up after him and was sort of redoing. And I said, pause. When you did work, when you were, you know, his age, I did not redo it for you in front of you. Because I don't want you to think that you're not good enough, that your work is not good enough for me.
Right.
And that's why you can bake bread, homemade sourdough bread at 12. That's why you can clean my kitchen, make a meal, do all these things. Why? Because I allowed you to fail and I never shamed you. But see, we don't know this stuff, Wendy.
Yes.
How would you know?
We're
just trying to survive. You know, we're not equipped with skills. I mean, if you think about it, Where do you get training on how to be a mother?
From your mom.
But if your mom is checked out,
right,
and your mom lacks a skill set, and your mom hasn't, you know, the world has gone so fast, there's no time, because that's what we have against us, then is it possible that motherhood has been, I would say, demonized as something that's hard, exhausting, almost to a point where it becomes a second class citizen? It is the path to, you know, holding us back from our dreams. And I keep thinking the most beautiful, precious thing that breathes life on earth, a new life, is what we call something that robs us of the life that we want. Absolutely a crime. There's no way. But the training that mothers need prior to is so crucial, because time management skills, emotional command, knowing how to build a routine, knowing how to say no, these are non-negotiable optional skills for motherhood. You will feel overwhelmed when you don't have this basic skill set.
Yes.
And so I'm committed. I'm a mom of eight. I'm building multiple businesses. And I tell them motherhood is glorious when you have skills. It is the opposite when you don't. So we do not have a choice but to endure the cross of training, because I always think it's, you know, it's discipline is the cross.
Yeah.
We don't live with the cross. There's a resurrection behind it, right? Because when you hire discipline and you know how to do these things, life is so much more joyful. Life is so much more, the quality of your life improves, but we have to learn these skill sets. And so I'm like, if you know, and that's sort of God's crazy. I think God is crazy. I love his crazy. What if we have a vision of having a school for mothers prior to motherhood, having a school for teenagers prior to them even going to college, so that they don't lose their soul in college?
Yes, I agree.
I mean, I don't think that we can continue in the trajectory that we're in with, you know, college girls are losing their souls. Mm-hmm. There's more OnlyFans model or whatever you call prostitution than teachers. Mm-hmm. Women don't want to be, 30% of Gen Z, I'm saying they don't want to be married or be mothers. We can't continue like this. It's literally evil is imploding in itself. And so we need women who have the heart to serve, to say, I need to train harder and I need to assume my rightful call for such a time as this, like Esther, and say, armor up for the battle, train daily, you know, discover my unconditional worth. What skill do I need today and every day for the rest of my life, so I can assume and defend my faith, family, and freedom for such a time where women are not only being robbed of their value, but being undefined? The masterpiece of creation is being robbed, which means God is being robbed of who he is. Our work has begun.
Our work has begun. How, so just to kind of wrap up, I have one.
I'm really passionate about it, Wendy. Can you tell?
I love, but I'm over here like tearing up, like getting emotional, because I agree with you. And I'm so thankful for you having the language, having the passion, and executing your passion. I think this is, I just love it. I want to be best friends with you.
We can be friends. I think there's so much room for deep friendship. But here's the thing. I'm just going to highlight that.
Yeah.
You need a lot of time. You need depth of time.
Yeah.
We just went so deep. I've not met you before.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the kind of friendship that is required for this new kind of world.
Yeah. I agree with that. That's good.
We should celebrate each other's.
Yay. So I have one last question, and then we'll wrap up. There are women at every age that are listening, right? And that you talk to, I'm sure. So those of us who are at the empty nester stage, and we didn't really do any of the things or didn't know the skills, because I'm sitting here going, oh, I wish I could go back and start all over again.
You're not alone.
Right. No, exactly. And I had children when I was supposed to have children and all the things, right? So how do you walk it back from a woman who is an empty nester, who feels the same way you do, and wants to develop these skills, but maybe she has, like I have 20-something children, and I have an 18-year-old, I have 7 children, by the way.
Wow, we're speaking the same language.
I know.
I didn't know that. That's amazing.
Thank you. And so mine are older than yours, but I have an 18-year-old and a 13-year-old still at home. The 18-year-old is, I love them all. But she's at that transition where she wants to be an adult for the fun things, but doesn't want to be an adult when she has to take care of her car. Right. You know, things like that.
Yeah.
Right. And then I have the 13-year-old who's just coming into this kind of awakening awareness, you know, so I still have a couple at home and I still influence my children. Don't get me wrong. How do I walk it back? And how would you suggest women who are my age, even a little older, grandmothers, how do we walk it back so that we're first, we have to take care of ourselves first, but that we're also retraining our brain, but also helping those women and children, grandchildren, and those who we may have some stewardship over, whether it's in church, teaching Sunday school, or we do daycare at home, or we're in the community somehow. How mm-hmm. would you suggest those of us who are older to develop the skills, but then also to help those that are younger?
Great question. So
thank you.
I think our wounds become the compass to our contribution. So the reason why I'm here in front of you was because nobody showed me how, and I'm passionate about it. So I tell women, and we have students 13 all the way up to their 80s, and we have 1,000 students across the globe. And I'll tell you, we probably have more of 45 to 60 students. I mean, women in terms of demographics. And I think the reason being is because I think they see what they have been robbed of.
Yes.
And they feel this fire because of actually is rooted from a pain and an ache. And they're seeing maybe their children, they're ill-equipped. And so where do you go from here? Number one, you have to train. You have to, you can't contribute the best of who you are when you lack the tools and the skills. So that's number one. What does that training mean? It means that you need to learn new skills. You need to discover the dream of the season. There's a dream for every season. I teach women, we are always told to dream, go for your dream, follow your dream. But how do you dream, Wendy? I teach mm-hmm. a dream as a skill set. And so number one is that we have to train. Number two, we then have to take those skills and do what we can with our littles or mm-hmm. your seven, because so many things that I am, you know, I don't know. I am training my children and in some ways not compensating, but I'm able to say, listen, nobody showed me how to do this and I suffered for it. So if you're open, then I need to, you know, I want to show you how to do this. So I'm literally, and I think this is the gift of being a woman. It's the gift of our receptivity that leads us to a greater generosity. So mm-hmm. I receive training and I give training. Now that's stewardship. Stewardship yes. of our call. And so it's like the parable of the talents. We're not burying that. You know, so it's stewardship of our call and then saying, how can that I give it to my children, but also to my church, to the mm-hmm. women in my community, to my friends, my family? That needs to be the flow, I think. And mm-hmm. so what I often see is women want to give, but they're not receiving. Mm-hmm. So now eventually they'll be giving from an empty cup, especially when you become an empty nester because you've given for years. And I often say, like, you know, sometimes the empty nesters, they're just want to be like, I'm going to go just like ravenous on the world because they've been so depleted for years. They don't even know what they want. And they've been giving so much, but they haven't received. And so as an empty nester out there, it's, I think, time to say, wait, take a step back. Why am I here? Who am I called to become? What is my call? And how am I going to live my best life forward? And then what skill do I need then? And I think that there needs to be I feel like our world has been orphaned, Wendy, because mm-hmm. the mothers that are coming through were not equipped, but they're also distracted, the young mothers. Mm-hmm. And so we need the empty nesters, the grandmothers, to actually then become surrogate mothers to the orphaned women that nobody's teaching them maybe how to bake bread or maybe how to clean their kitchen or maybe how to, you know, communicate their needs effectively. I mean, we need this sort of generational, I would say, contribution that used to be present in the infrastructure of family life 100 years ago when we lived in farms. Mm-hmm. But now it's missing. So we need to somehow, kind of remodel that in our current culture. And what I think is that the empty nesters and the grandmothers are the one that's saying, let me show you how. This is actually how our coaching model was born. Women mm-hmm. were training in the woman's school because I never thought of myself as, you know, I was always a teacher. And so the women were like, January, I've gone to the woman's school. How can I teach women? I'm like, let me just pause for a minute. What is God asking you to do? And so we created a whole entire coaching model because women were saying, I need to give this back. Mm-hmm. I can't keep this for myself. So now I train women to build a business based on the frameworks and formulas that I teach in the women's school. And that's why I think God's crazy. Because I'm like, really, Lord? I have eight children. Like, can you just, no, I'm just kidding. All in joy and freedom, Wendy. And that's what I tell women. You can build a business. You can design a beautiful life. You can have quality friendship. And you can suffer at certain seasons of your life, but it can be done in joy and freedom. Just like the podcast. You know, what good is it if I've achieved all these accolades and, you know, millions of dollars and achieved the country, or written books and bestseller, if my home life isn't nourishing me, if there's no joy in my heart, if my marriage is stressful? That's what our culture, it's like achieve, 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 achieve.
Right.
Instead of being fully alive.
Yeah.
You know, wholeness is our model. It's, you know, the woman's school, our goal is to rebuild culture one whole woman at a time. And that's actually scriptural. It comes from the scripture, be perfect as your Heavenly Father is perfect. A lot of people kind of don't know what the Latin or the root word of perfect actually comes from, the Greek word teleos, which is to be complete, to be whole.
Yeah.
So to me, the antidote to the evil in the world is that women are whole. Because when women are whole, they are resilient against evil.
Oh, I love that. That is so, it is so true. I actually did a podcast, I don't remember, a couple of months ago, saying perfection is a lie, because our perfect in our culture isn't what the word perfect really means, which is whole and complete. And what we're saying together is we can become whole. It's step by step. And even Jesus was precept upon precept. He didn't, not that he wasn't perfect from the get-go, but he did have to learn things as well. But that's so beautiful. My gosh. Like I said, I just need to be your best friend.
It's so funny. You can share great deep friendship. I'm grateful for it.
Well, I am so thankful for your time to come and to talk with me. Like, I feel like I'm the winner here, but the listeners are the winner for sure. And with that, they're going to want to know where to find you. So tell us your things, and everything she says will be in the show notes, so you can go find the links there as well.
Lovely. So there you can go to newwomanmasterclass.com and you can get a free coaching call on what you want and don't want. Our coaches give women free strategy call to actually begin to design a life that's whole. So go to the newwomanmasterclass.com, just schedule, book a free coaching call on the life of wholeness. We also offer a How to Be a Woman free course as a direct response to women being undefined, and it's free for all women. So we have thousands of women in there every single month. It's a 1 month class, and you get put into a coach in a community for 1 month, and you work through a class together, and you kind of start to begin the journey of understanding why you're here and what your purpose is as a woman. So that is also the How to Be a Woman free course.com. You can access that. But then you can find me in January Donovan, Instagram, thewomanschool.com. And just, you know, I just invite you and all your listeners, is that it's time for us to armor up. You and I were created for such a time as this. And the only way we do that is that we train harder than we never imagined. I think that is our generational call for this season. So
I love it. I love it. And I love you. Thank you so much. Thank you, Wendy. I do. I'm so thankful. And I just feel so enriched and so enlightened. And it's just wonderful. Thank you for taking God's call and doing what you're doing. And I'm just thankful.
Me too. And I'm grateful for this. And I always tell everyone, I said, you know, when you give, you receive. And so I feel equally grateful to have this conversation, because I think that's how God really, it's just his mercy, you know.
Yes. And
sure, he's given this, but even our call is not ours to keep, but ours to give.
Right. And
giving, I feel fully alive and grateful. So I just want to share the same equal gratitude for me being here.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for listening to Joyfully Prepared. I'm grateful for you and appreciate you inviting me into your life. Please subscribe and tell all your friends about this delightful podcast.
Leaving a joyful review would earn you all sorts of karma points too. I invite you to join my free Facebook group at www.joyfulprepgroup.com and join with other like-minded mothers.